The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent. This non-commercial program is for educational purposes only.
You're listening to Radio Azim Premji University.
Lantana. That's a pretty name for a plant, isn't it? Enigmatic and musical like a piece of Latin jazz. But say that name to any conservationist and you're likely to get a frown or a sharp glare. Or in extreme cases, maybe even a cuss word. Because Lantana is a controversial plant. And why is that? Dutch explorers in Central and South America fell in love with Lantana. You see, Lantana has these clusters of attractive pink, red, and orange flowers that look like miniature wedding bouquets. And they have a fresh, spicy, almost peppery kind of scent. So these explorers, they collected a few plants and brought them back with them to Europe. And back home in the Netherlands, they planted Lantana in a garden alongside some of their other favorite flowers like tulips and crocuses. Those pretty flowers, I tell you, those pretty flowers seduced pollinators like bees and butterflies. Birds, oh, the birds just loved the juicy blackberries and they ate them and dispersed the seeds along with their droppings. And that's how Lantana became a globetrotter, traveling far and wide. In a matter of decades, Lantana spread to about 50 countries on 5 continents. And then, with a little help from humans, who were dazzled by its beauty, it spread even to remote islands like the Maldives and Philippines. Let's come around to India. In India, it was brought to Goa by the Portuguese around 200 years ago. And soon, it escaped into the Western Ghats and then just kept on going wherever forests were cleared for cultivation. If you look around today, it's really hard to find a place in India where Lantana does not grow. Over to Richa and Madhuri.
So when I go to buy vegetables, the first thing I look for, probably like most people, are the usual suspects, right? Aloo, tomato, gobi, onion, right? These are the kinds of things that get used every day in our kitchens. But have you ever wondered how many of these vegetables that we cannot live without, that we think of as quintessentially Indian, where have they come from? Are they really native to India? Or have they come to us from somewhere else? In fact, tomatoes were introduced to India via Portuguese traders in the 16th century. Roughly 100 years after that, they introduced potatoes into our diet, another staple ingredient in many Indian meals. Can you even imagine a day without using tomatoes or potatoes in some form or another in your food? We come across many non-native species of plants every day. Some which we find useful to eat, like the vegetables. Some we value for their beauty, like potted plants. Or even animals, which we often keep as pets. Today, we are going to talk about one such non-native plant called Lantana. Hi, my name is Richa Govil.
Hi, I'm Madhuri Ramesh.
And this is the story of On Radio Azim Premji University.
And this is the story of Lantana.
You've probably seen it, even if you don't know the name. It has these tiny, pretty flowers, clusters of flowers. You might see it growing on the roadside. Especially if you are at borders of national parks or forest. It's about 4 or 5 feet tall, a bushy plant. Sometimes you will even find it as a decorative plant in people's gardens and balconies. In fact, my earliest introduction to the plant Lantana was when I was a child. I remember this family trip to the Corbett National Park. And in those days, you could, you know, the safaris were on elephant backs. So I remember riding this elephant with my parents, grandparents, my brother, and my father pointing out to the side, this one plant that I could see with these beautiful flowers. And he said that its uncontrollable spread would displace many native species of plants in the forest. I remember looking at the plant with its pretty and distinctive flowers and imagining a whole forest full only of lantana bushes. Fast forward 4 decades. Today, any national park you visit, it's very easy to spot lantana growing everywhere. So, lantana, aloo, tomato, gobi, what is the connection here? I have invited today Madhuri Ramesh from School of Development at Azim Premji University to tell us more about this.
Hi.
So, let's talk about lantana. Does it really spread very fast?
Yeah, absolutely. Lantana has a pretty villainous reputation in forest areas, and that's because of how fast it spreads and how quickly it takes over the entire place. It's considered an invasive species, which means it is a plant that enters a landscape through human intervention, and then it begins to take over the entire area and competes with native plants for sunlight, water, soil nutrients, and gradually but definitely pushes them all out. It spreads really fast because its berries are very attractive to fruit-eating birds, like bulbuls, for example. They eat the fruit, and then as they fly about, they excrete the seeds and they end up spreading lantana over a huge area.
So how did lantana come to India? Do we know?
Well, we know a little bit about its history. So for instance, we know that a pastor took a potted lantana to his garden in Coorg. And then he liked it very much and tended over it carefully. And somehow it gradually crept out of his garden and into the wild. And in about 10-20 years, it became a really common plant in the fields and the forests in Coorg. And in fact, we have records of British forest officers noticing this pretty plant in the beginning and saying, oh, you know, pretty flowers like all of us do. And then within 10-20 years, they're writing an absolute horror about how it's taking over the grasslands. It's, you know, competing with native species. And they start feeling concerned that it might actually be an invasive and that those pretty flowers are actually quite problematic. So what I mean when I say something is an invasive plant, that lantana is an invasive plant, is that, as I said in the beginning, it is something that is introduced into a landscape by human activity. It's not through natural dispersal such as, you know, birds or the wind or the water carrying it into a landscape. And the second thing is that invasive species are often fierce competitors. So they are able to take up the nutrients from the soil, the sunlight, the water. They harness all of that in their favor and they start to grow faster and faster. While species that are actually native to that ecosystem, that belong to that landscape, are much more slow growing and so are left with no nutrients, not enough sunlight. And they slowly wilt away. They literally wither away. And so this species then becomes the main thing that you see when you walk into that area. It finally, you know, pushes out everybody else, and that's why it's called an invasive species.
So if it is not native to India, where did it actually come from?
The lantana plant is actually native to Central and South America. It's, you know, it belongs to places like Mexico and Brazil. It grows in those warm climates and it can grow well even in poor soil. But it also has a long history of cultivation because the European colonizers who first went to the New World found it a very attractive plant and they carefully brought back specimens to grow in little pots in glass houses and they planted it in their gardens. And all of this was very common around the 1800s. And then, in fact, we have historical records in India which tell us that lantana was brought by the British East India Company employees, and this came in between 1800 and 1900. In fact, one botanist at the Ashoka Trust for Research in Ecology and the Environment has found records which specifically mention that the lantana was planted in Bangalore's Lalbagh Gardens in 1857, when the British annexed Tipu Sultan's territory. So we have very precise dates for some areas, you know, and we are able to reimagine how Lantana came to certain locations. But there are other areas that we just can speculate about. But in general, it's fair to say that Lantana has been around for a couple of hundred years, and it has been recognized as a problem plant for much of that time.
But hey, how much harm can a plant do? It can't bite, right? Well, in the case of Lantana, the bark is really worse than the bite, because Lantana has three very bad habits. One, it is an aggressive competitor and colonizer. It spreads quickly and occupies cleared farmland and deforested areas by growing faster and more densely than native shrubs and bushes. Now, the second point is, and we can say this at the risk of sounding dramatic, Lantana is a bad team player. Hear that again. Lantana is a bad team player. Once it occupies the land, it prevents other plants from sharing that space. Sinister, right? How does it do this? Lantana does this by excreting what are called allelopathic chemicals. These chemicals reduce the growth of the surrounding plants by slowing down their germination and root elongation. This is not good news for biodiversity, which is so important for maintaining a healthy ecological balance. Point three is that Lantana is toxic to grazing animals. So that means you can't just call in a herd of goats and get them to clean up the undergrowth, as you do with other plants. And pulling them out is both hard work and highly expensive to do. So most people just let Lantana be. Back to Richa and Madhuri.
And what can be done to eliminate the plant, right? So once it has spread to a broad area, what are the kinds of things that have been tried?
Well, people have literally taken an axe to Lantana. They've tried cutting it down. But these thickets are very difficult to cut down because they're thorny and they are also in very dense tangles. So what happens is, as you cut the thicket down, the root simply puts out new stems and then it grows back really fast. Then people have tried digging out the roots, but that's an extraordinarily expensive, time-consuming process because it has such deep roots, such large root networks. So then people tried setting fire to Lantana in the dry season when the stems are, you know, flammable. But even that hasn't worked very well because it burns very quickly and therefore it can easily become a large, uncontrollable forest fire. So then people tried releasing animals which are pests to attack Lantana. They kind of declared war on it. But even that doesn't work because plants have, through millions of years, learned to respond with chemical defenses when they face a pest attack. So the Lantana plants pretty much did that. And we have found that pests have very limited impact on Lantana, and that can't be the only strategy we use. So it's still quite a big challenge to figure out how to remove Lantana. We don't yet have a perfect answer.
So you're painting the picture of a plant which enters a landscape and pretty much takes over, and it's very, very difficult to forget, get rid of, to even control, right? So is that a problem in Brazil and Mexico as well?
Well, not entirely, because along with Lantana, say, the typical Brazilian plants would have also evolved at the same time. So over a long period of evolutionary history, they have also learned strategies to push back Lantana and still continue growing. So this is the interesting thing about what we call invasive plants or animals. They have their own role, they have their own value in the place they belong. The problem is when we bring them elsewhere and we plant them or introduce them into a different forest system, then they can kind of go wild and take over everything.
So when the forest department or the other authorities discovered this, what did they do?
Oh, there was the usual amount of hand-wringing over how the forests were getting degraded. And we have some records, like for instance, in 1893, the Forest Department officials in Coorg wrote many letters to higher authorities saying that they need a sum of 7,000 rupees per square kilometer to pull out lantana and to remove it from forest areas. And that's actually a huge sum of money if you think about it in today's terms. That's more than 7 lakhs per square kilometer. And it would have had to be done entirely through manual labor in 1893. And they did try it. They tried very hard to pull out lantana. And like I said, then they resorted to burning the thickets. They even tried spraying herbicides in smaller plots. And there was a short period of time when they used what we call biocontrol, which means releasing insects that can feed on different parts of the plant and affect its growth. And right across the world, there have been about 38 such different insect species that people have experimented with. So the forest department here pretty much tried whatever was known through the ages as a way of trying to limit the growth of lantana. But as I said, it has been a very mixed bag. That we've tried all of this, but we've not been entirely successful with any one method.
Interesting. But let me step back a little bit. We have been using the term invasive, native, non-native. Can you define some of these terms for us?
Sure. It's quite a laundry list of terms. And I will say upfront that these are sort of terms that biologists use from a sense of common understanding, but we don't have an exact definition. Let me explain what I mean. When I say native species, I mean that these are plants or animals that have for a very long time been part of a particular region or been part of a particular ecosystem. Now, do I have a specific cutoff date that they're native if they are there before 1700 or non-native if they came after 1700? The answer is no. So it's quite an arbitrary way of using the term. But like I said, biologists in general have a shared understanding, so we know what the other person means when they say a plant is native or non-native. A related word is alien or exotic. Now, these are interesting words because non-native plants that we don't like or that we don't see value in, we tend to dismiss as alien, but they're not from Mars. And things that we are attracted to or we think there is some value, we say exotic. So these are really very subjective labels. And the plants that are absolute nuisance plants and that destroy existing ecosystems or species or biodiversity, those plants and animals we call invasives.
So lantana probably started being thought of as exotic and pretty quickly became invasive.
Exactly.
Can you give examples of other species of plants which are considered invasive species?
Oh yeah, sure. So for instance, another notorious example is Prosopis juliflora, which is known throughout North India as Gandha Bawal. This is another thorny plant and it can grow again in a range of ecosystems. It spreads really fast because not only is it a hardy plant, but its pods and seeds are very attractive to livestock. So as the livestock consume the pods and they disperse the seeds in the dung, they are actually helping the plant spread all over. This Prosopis tends to deplete soil and groundwater. Again, it chokes off the growth of other species. So this is also a clear case of an invasive species. And I just want to mention that it's not just plants that can be invasives. Animals can also be invasive species. And sometimes it's the most unlikely animals that can be invasive species. So for instance, we usually think of cats as small, furry, sweet animals, but they are actually deadly predators. And there are many, many documented cases of how stray cat populations have hunted out native birds and animals, especially in island countries. I'll tell you a very quick story about a particularly infamous cat. This cat's name was Tibbles. And it lived in a really tiny place called Stephen's Island, which is off the coast of New Zealand. Tibbles belonged to one of the lighthouse keepers who lived there. His name was David Lyall. And in fact, he was a very keen bird watcher. And he found that in the time that he was posted there, that his cat kept hunting small birds and affectionately bringing it to him and leaving it on his front door mat. And because he was a birder, he was very curious. He tried to identify the species, found that he wasn't sure of what it was, but he was getting many of these little birds from Tibbles, and he eventually sent a whole bunch of specimens to the museum in the main island and asked the scientists there to tell him what it was. It took them almost a year to figure out that this was an entirely new species to science, and they in fact named it Lyell's Wren in his honor. And by the time he got that information, the story is that Tibbles had hunted out every last wren from that island. So it was a tragic irony that by the time you knew what bird it was completely wiped out by this furry little cat.
Furry little cat. Cats do catch rats, but they also have other things on their minds. All was well as long as the cat stayed indoors. But then, humans, they're such adventurers and travelers. And when they made voyages to distant places, they liked a little company. And who would be on the boat with them? Cats. Cats hopped onto the boat with them. And the tragedy is that they also hopped off the boats. On remote oceanic islands like New Zealand and Australia, animals and birds had evolved in the absence of large carnivorous predators. So they were easy targets for the sharp fangs and vicious claws of the house cat. Now, our little cuddly cats seized the opportunity and started spending more time outdoors in this rich and bountiful land where they could revert to their wild instincts and hunt for their food. Even today, all over the world, feral cats, that is, house cats gone wild, are the biggest threat to wild birds and animals. In New Zealand and Australia, feral cats have a price on their heads, and you can earn some pocket money for shooting one. But it's going to take a lot of bullets and reward money before the last feral cat is put down. Until then, birds will continue to be endangered. With that thought planted in our minds, let's get back to our friend, Lantana.
So let's ask another question. Do all alien plants create a nuisance? Conversely, are all native species useful? You know, earlier I talked about potatoes, tomatoes, gobi. Should we consider them alien or invasive or something else?
Now we're moving from ecology to philosophy. Well, we use these labels from an entirely human perspective. So it's a pretty instrumental way of classifying biodiversity around us. You know, speaking of which, let me add another example to this point about how species may be non-native but also non-invasive. There's a beautiful anecdote in the Babar Nama where when Babar is feeling particularly homesick at one point and he is camped somewhere on the banks of the Indus, an emissary comes from his homeland in Andijan, Uzbekistan, and the emissary brings a ripe musk melon to the court, and he cuts it open in front of the king and offers it to him as a gift. And Babar says he had tears in his eyes that morning because he felt so homesick when he smelt that ripe melon. And in fact, he says the gardens and the fruits of Hindustan are very barbaric. He doesn't think much of the mangoes we have. He feels they lack the refined taste and the smell of a muskmelon. So he's very happy when this person brings him a muskmelon from his homeland, and he calls the royal gardener and orders him to preserve the seeds carefully and to replant it everywhere. So that's in fact one explanation of how muskmelons came to India. And they are not an invasive species.
So the species which we introduce, which we consider desirable in some way or another, we don't call them invasive. But the ones that are undesirable, they are the ones we end up calling invasive, right?
Exactly. It's a matter of marketing. What we like is an exotic. What we don't like is an alien.
So if I come back to Lantana, is there any use of that plant?
There have been several environmental organizations which have also been trying to find a solution to this problem of Lantana choking forests. And they are mainly interested in the social side of this story, which is, how does the presence of lantana affect forest-dependent communities, right? So as scientists for many years have found out, lantana chokes up the grasslands, so it affects people who depend on livestock grazing, for instance, or by not allowing forest trees to grow, it affects people who depend on non-timber forest produce for their livelihoods. So these NGOs have been working with communities for a while, and then they thought, why not convert this painful plant into something useful that people can sell and make a livelihood out of? So they have been experimenting with how to make furniture and objects from lantana the way you would from cane or bamboo. And two organizations in particular have been working on this for quite some time. ATRI, which I mentioned earlier, and another one called the Shola Trust. They have found that the woody stems of the lantana are actually very strong, so you can make it into furniture, you can make it into bookshelves, tables, all kinds of objects. And from 2004 onwards, they have set up craft collectives in different parts amongst the Adivasi communities and helped them work with lantana as a raw material to make these kinds of things.
And helps them earn an income.
That's true. So what the Shola Trust and ATRI have done is to work with these Adivasi craftspeople and make these large life-size elephant sculptures. The really interesting detail here is that people have modeled these elephants on real elephants that they know in their forest region. So every elephant is distinctive and looks different from the other one.
So that's fascinating. These organizations are trying to raise awareness about the issue of uncontrolled spread of lantana and its impact not only on other plants, animals, but also the people who live and are dependent on forest resources by using lantana itself for an exhibition. So that's quite fascinating. So what happens when, you know, now that it has been, you know, over 100 years that lantana has been in India, I mean, is it in any way becoming integrated with our ecosystem or is it still separate? How do we think about all of this?
Well, biology doesn't yet have a very clear answer to that. But what biologists have been talking about is this idea of a novel ecosystem. So, for example, there is increasingly reason to believe that we might be seeing the emergence of new kinds of ecosystems, that is, new associations between plants and animals that have historically not been there before. Let me give you an example from New Zealand again. There used to be these beech forests in the upland areas, but over several hundred years of humans setting fire in these areas, those forests have completely collapsed. I mean that the soil has become degraded, there are no viable seeds left, and the seed dispersing birds and animals also started to disappear. So you might have been, you know, earlier tempted to write off this place and think that it will remain a devastated landscape. But with time, what has happened is that a novel ecosystem has formed. This landscape has now been transformed into a tussock grassland ecosystem. And so there's a different group of plants and animals that are associated with each other and that function as an ecosystem in the same area. So you do have cases where there has been replacement by something completely new, and we call these novel ecosystems. Lantana might well result in the formation of a novel ecosystem in some places at least.
So if lantana is taking over forests, it must be affecting the habitats of wildlife, right, in the national parks. So what could be the kind of a new ecosystem that emerges?
So we might see some birds or small mammals that are able to use lantana thickets instead of, you know, whatever other habitats they were using. Or maybe there will just be a giant forest fire that burns up the whole thing. And then over many years, that ash and the dead wood and everything becomes nutrient and you see a new set of plants and a new set of animals and birds come back. So any of these scenarios are actually probable, I guess. And we would need some very careful modeling to know which one might play out.
That's quite something. And it seems that our battle with this invasive species will continue for some time to come.
Oh, yes. Lantana is here to stay, and we will need to use as many different strategies as we can to probably control it.
So while we have been talking about Lantana specifically, what this discussion has really been about is the nature of different kinds of species that we interact with every day. We could be eating certain food items, we could be using some plants in our gardens, or looking at some wild or domestic animals in our national parks and our homes. And the question it raises is really, what is this definition of native or non-native? Whether native is always beneficial and non-native always harmful. And you know, where we arrive at is this idea of new kinds of ecosystems which are emerging as a result of human action and activities, and where new relationships between these plants, animals and humans are being formed. So that's it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madhuri.
Hope you enjoyed the story of Lantana with Richa and Madhuri. My name is Bijoy Venugopal. I write the content in our show notes and on our website. Do a quick Google search for Radio Azim Premji University, that is Radio Azim Premji University, and check out our shows. Subscribe to us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and more. Enjoy listening.
You're listening to
Radio Azim Premji University.